not woke. Make that clear. Awake, not woke.
Hello and welcome to episode 7 of the Awake Not Woke podcast. My name is Sarah, and how about that intro music? Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. We finally got some real intro music instead of just royalty-free music, and it's amazing. Chas's husband made it. I'm so happy. I'm so thankful that he was able to make that for us. And he used the soundbite from Eddie Bravo saying, "Awake, not woke." So how cool is that? Eddie Bravo unintentionally gave us a promo in his reemergence from his hideout on the episode of Tinfoil Hat that came out a few weeks, months ago. I don't even know how long ago anymore. But I'm so excited about that. I hope you guys like it. And this episode is going to be awesome. This is all about The Matrix, and I mean that as in the movie and the simulation that we are currently living in. Stay tuned to find out what exactly I mean by that. We will break down what we mean by the simulation we live in, what we think is important about the movie The Matrix, and so on. But yeah, I hope you guys enjoy this one. It was really fun to make. Chas and I had a great time talking about this. We had a really interesting NPC conversation. This is going to be a good one for all you gamers out there. I talk about my experience, limited experience with Skyrim, The Witcher 3, and Grand Theft Auto. I love me some open world games. And yeah, follow us on Instagram. At Awake Not Woke Podcast on Instagram, at Awake Not Woke Pod on Twitter, and awakenotwokepodcast.com for growing website info. I hope to get eventually a page up there on book recommendations, a page up on words that we use frequently, so a little dictionary page. So if you're ever confused about anything we're saying, you can check that out there. And I'm hoping to just get a lot of general references up there for you starseeds on your journey out there. So yeah, check out the website. It will be changing ever so often. Yeah, I think that's all I got to say, and I hope you guys enjoy this episode. Peace.
Perfect.
Hey, welcome to Awake Not Woke Podcast. My name is Chas, and as always, I'm here with Sarah. And today we are going to be talking about The Matrix and some simulation theory and what we know about that and our outlook on it and some of the information that we have learned to get to this point. So we'll cover some pop culture in regards to The Matrix movie and possibly even a little bit of Truman Show action. But it's going to be a really cool discussion. And if you have any background info on this already, I think you'll really enjoy this. And if you are new to this stuff, then welcome to The Matrix. Let's go.
Hey, I like that. That was good. Yeah. So let's just start about talking about the movie, The Matrix, and the trilogy. And there's a fourth movie coming out soon, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
But that's where this phrase is really originating from in our brains and our lexicons. This is like the birthplace of our understanding of The Matrix, and we just want to explain to you how that has added value into our lives on a perspective situation, also on a spiritual level, and that all starts with the movie. So if you haven't seen the movie, just go watch it. It's a great series.
Yeah.
It's so good. There's so much lore behind it. There's a lot of like spin-off, mini series, comics, stuff like that, that add to the canon of The Matrix. But just the trilogy, I mean, even just the first movie are really, really great things to watch from a symbolic and awakened perspective. So we're not going to like break down any timeline or anything like that. Go just look up a YouTube video about the, like, if you need like a too lazy, didn't want to watch it, go watch a quick movie or clip about The Matrix and then come back to this podcast. But the first point about the movie that I wanted to talk about was they're using their robots, AI, artificial intelligence, using humans as batteries.
Yeah.
So just that like concept right there is a very spiritual and evil and scary concept to consider. And it kind of relates back to our conspiracy episode. And I don't know how much we touched on adrenochrome in the conspiracy episode, but you said you wanted to talk about Truman Show a little bit.
Yeah.
I wanted to also talk about Monsters, Inc. a little bit
because
this is all revolving around this idea of like using humans as batteries or using our energy to fuel something else.
Yeah.
So where your attention goes, energy flows. And when all of our attention is on the media or on the same bad thing or the same whatever, anything, if we're focusing all our energy on one thing, that one thing is going to be able to use that energy to its own advantage when necessary or when to whatever agenda they may be promoting. So The Matrix is takes that to a very literal place. And I want to make clear that Chas and I do not believe we are human batteries surrounded by machines or anything like that. But the metaphor of the Matrix is still fan-fucking-tastic because there are two realities. There's tons of realities, but there are two distinct baseline realities that we are existing in at all times, and that is the three-dimensional reality and then the higher-dimensional reality or the 5D reality. And we can intersect between these realities at all times. And there are also so many different things we can put our attention on. So we want to remember that when we're in the Matrix and we're actually being that human battery, we are being completely absorbed in propaganda-like material, whether that be radio, TV, just hearing it from friends. A lot of misunderstanding goes on when you inadvertently take the blue pill and remain in the Matrix.
Right.
So that brings us to the next like symbolism in the Matrix that is really important to Chas and I, and that is the red pill versus blue pill situation. So Morpheus, who we could go into all the symbolism behind just the word Morpheus and the Greek god that name comes from and all that. I actually don't have anything on that prepared, but there's so much symbolism just behind a lot of the naming in this movie as well that we could just make an entire podcast about the Matrix movie.
For sure.
And just talk about it for hours. But Morpheus offers Neo the option to take either the red pill and get out of the Matrix and wake up and truly see the reality around him, or he could take the blue pill and remain asleep and remain in the Matrix living his normal life.
Yeah.
And that is a metaphor that a lot of truthers, conspiracy theorists, patriots like to use for the cognitive dissonance that is experienced when you wake up to the reality that there are things happening that you couldn't believe were possible before.
And that you were being controlled.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, yes,
like absolutely. Waking up to that realization is a really hard one. And if you are feeling that right now, you're not alone. I think a lot of people who are waking up and truly awakening are experiencing that shift where you're stepping into your sovereignty, but with that comes the remembrance of just being absorbed in propaganda, and that's really hard to accept sometimes.
Yeah, and in our reality we may experience a constant to and fro from these realities, and we have to remember to take the red pill on a daily basis. Right. It's a red vitamin in these day and age. But in the movie, he wakes up and realizes that he's literally in a simulated reality, and the real reality exists in completely different context to the simulated reality that he was in. And there's so much that goes on throughout this movie that is just very indicative to synchronicities and paranormal activities that we experience on a daily life. But in the Matrix, they explained it as like computer programs that were invisible and stuff like that. And I think that's a very valid way of explaining some of these other consciousnesses. And it's not like to discount these consciousnesses in any way, but to conceptualize that in a way that some people may understand better. The Matrix is a really great analogy for how these higher dimensional beings may be working among us without seeming far-fetched and crazy. It's very realistic and understandable, but to the average person who may be more engaged in computer programming or video gaming or those type of things, simulation theory and this type of talk when it comes to the Matrix might actually be a very valuable analogy for spiritual concepts as
well. For sure.
Because when it all comes down to it, if the Matrix is a simulated reality, and what we talked about in our past episodes about the mental universe and how we live in a holographic universe, and it's all just a simulation of the source mind, then we still are in a simulation. I'm getting ahead of myself at this point, but we're talking about the movie still, and I will get to my personal thoughts on the Matrix in a second. But the next really important symbolism in the Matrix is the architect and the oracle. So these are two really huge characters in the movie that play certain roles that can be, again, conceptualizations of spiritual things that may help you understand how this spirituality and awakened process affects your daily life.
Yeah.
So the oracle represents that divine mother aspect of the world, that intuition, the deciding of timelines, like which timeline we're going down.
Yeah.
And then the architect is like the building of the universe and the building of the timelines. And one of the things that I was really struck by when I was doing research for this podcast was when the architect was confronting Neo. I think this was in like the second or third movie.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about the different versions of the Matrix and how in this universe, in the movie Matrix universe, these robots like took over mankind, and there's like a whole backstory on that that's very interesting. But they basically were the robots, the AI, were trying to figure out a way to subdue humans so they wouldn't be an issue anymore because we just suck and they wanted to get rid of us.
Jeez.
So they eventually found out that we were made out of energy, and they could harness that energy and use it to power their weird robot stuff. And it's really interesting because if you get in the lore of it, it ends up like eventually backfiring on them. And there's like robots who start breaking out of the Matrix and like AI that start going against the Matrix and stuff, because it's just like how when the humans made the AI to begin with, the AI became smarter than them. So the AI made more AI. It did the same thing. But anyway,
The book that I just started, Superintelligence by Nick Bostrom.
Yeah.
I literally just started it today, so I don't really have much to say about it other than the fact that was in like the beginning portion is talking about how once we have created this like AI intelligence, that the likelihood of that being able to create a higher one, like we're done for.
Yeah, no, it's anyway. All very interesting, plausible, disgusting, scary. There's so many different ways to look at this and to take this in. But at the end of the day, it's a very realistic analogy. So anyway, the architect, he's talking about the past versions of the Matrix in the movie. So the past versions originally were utopias. So they'd put all these humans in these capsules and pumped them full of food and barely kept them alive, which is a motif that I've seen regularly in pop culture. Adventure Time has a whole spinoff series on this exactly it, which you need to finish. Chas has watched all the other cartoons that I like and she still won't watch Adventure. I'm just going to keep putting you on blast for all the things I want you to watch on the podcast until I guilt you enough to actually watch
it. I do them. Watch it. I just don't watch it 24/7.
You just got to finish it. Anyway, so the motif of keeping humans barely alive so they can live in a fake reality is a motif I've seen very frequently. But the AI in the Matrix universe originally tried to make it a utopia. So they were just kind of like, if you could imagine putting on VR goggles and just like, you couldn't control anything, but it was just the most beautiful, serene, peaceful living ever, but you couldn't control anything. That's kind of how I think the first versions of the Matrix were. And I think he clarifies later that when he means versions, it just means he made a version, and then when there was an anomaly, he had to re-fix the anomaly. That's a new version. So it's kind of counting based on the anomalies. And the anomalies are people that woke up out of the Matrix. So, and I think there's, again, more complications, or like people who were disrupting the Matrix, not necessarily just waking up out of it. So when it was a utopia, it didn't work at all because people, their brains like rejected it because they just knew it wasn't real reality and they like couldn't assimilate, and they all just started waking up. It was a disaster. So he had to add a new element, and that new element was the element of choice. So I thought that was so powerful because he was giving them the element of choice, meaning you were living in a simulated reality that was very similar to our reality now, where we have free will and we have choice, but all of your choices were just laid out in front of you, and you had a false sense of choice because every choice led to the same result, or it just kept you deeper into the Matrix. So it didn't matter what choice you made. And that reminds me of our political system. It's literally our two-party system where you choose left or right, and they're both part of the same bird. Like, it's left wing and right wing for a reason. It's the same thing. And It's the illusion of choice. So that's what our social engineers in this real reality do all the time. They give you the illusion of choice, the illusion of I'm on the right side, they're on the wrong side. No, they're on the wrong side, I'm on the right side. Yeah. And it's all part of the whole. That's why the right, air quotes, side is the neutral and higher third perspective.
Yeah.
It is not the left. It is not the right. It is the higher one. And when you have the illusion that the two are the all, then you think, oh, I'm stuck here. That's why there is the architect and there is the oracle. There's not a source.
Yeah. And I think how that relates to spirituality too is the idea that God gives us choice, and we literally did choose to incarnate here. So that is a testament to the choice and free will that we do have being a part of the one true all. We can choose to stay within, or we can choose to incarnate out, and that scoop comes out of the soup, and then there you are.
Scoop out of the soup. I like it. No, but yeah, and that's why the Matrix is still just a great analogy for reality, despite it being a fake reality in the movie. And obviously you would want to wake up out of the Matrix, but waking up out of the Matrix just wakes you up into real reality, which is still a Matrix, but it is the Matrix of the infinite. The Matrix of the movie is a matrix of the finite. It's a matrix of AI that was created by humans, which is still finite.
Yeah.
So no matter how powerful that is, it's never going to be as powerful as the all. And it's very interesting and complicated. There's so much symbolism in just this movie that we could talk about. I mean, even the Oracle telling Neo when he's like sitting down with the Oracle in the park or whatever before that guy comes and they have like that crazy fight scene there. She's talking about how there's all these programs running the Matrix at all times. And there's invisible programs all around us. If you've ever seen like something out of the corner of your eye or something like blip, that's all those invisible programs designed to make everything run seamless. And everything is rendering as you go.
Yeah.
So this is, again, a very viable explanation for our actual reality. Because although I do not believe we're in a computer simulation, I do believe that paranormal activity is just activity of consciousnesses at a higher level that do not contain physical form.
For sure.
So that would be an invisible program that does not have a visible body within the Matrix. It would be the program that just keeps the sky from falling and shit like that.
Yeah.
And that even gets into the spiritual elemental spirits and the spirits that are the wind and the water and the rain and the storms and the fairies that keep the nature healthy and all these little folk spirits that you hear about. These are all very valid programs that are running our reality, and whether they are there by the creation of Source, or they're there by the creation of many, many, many people believing they're there.
Yeah.
Does it matter?
Right.
We are Source. And if we created it, then Source created it. And it doesn't matter if Source created it first or if we created it first. It doesn't matter. They exist now.
Yeah. One thought that I've had about reality that I actually wrote down to talk about in relation to the simulation is the simulation isn't reality. The simulation is the environment in which reality takes place. And if we create our own reality as the creators, then like you said, we created the simulation, but the reality is that we are creating our reality within this environment all the time, all the time. And in regards to, I think it's just, I don't remember like the technical term, that's not my strong suit, but I do know that it's basically energy follows thought. Something doesn't exist unless you're giving it attention and energy. And when you're not giving it attention and energy, it doesn't exist. So because we create our own reality. I'm just kind of off on a tangent.
You're off on a tangent, but I have stuff written about down about that too. I don't know if there's a technical term. There could be. I was watching videos about simulation theory specifically, which we'll get to in a minute, but they were talking about how if we were in a simulation, the only way that we could have ever created a computer powerful enough to simulate this kind of reality, it would have to render as we go. So
right.
That is the whole, if a tree falls in a forest and there's no one around
exactly.
to see it, does
exactly.
it make or hear it, does it make a sound? And I believe that is a very valid, again, a very valid analogy to incorporate into your daily perspective, because we are the creators of our reality. Therefore, we are the ones rendering our reality as we consume it. So it's not quite the same thing as being in a computer and the computer rendering your reality, like Skyrim, Witcher 3, Grand Theft Auto, stuff like that. Those open world games render your reality as you go. And if you've ever like done cheat codes and gone faster than the game could render, you end up in like a blank nothingness zone, and it's really trippy.
Yeah.
And that's slightly different, but still a very great analogy for this concept. But the only difference is we are not in a simulation. We are the simulators.
Oh, right.
I need to clip that for Instagram.
For sure.
Fuck yeah.
And one, in my opinion, the one concept of awakening or escaping the Matrix, if you will, is the idea that we realize that, yes, whatever, we're in this open world, whatever you just, I'm not a gamer.
Yeah.
But I understand what you mean.
And I'm not open a gamer world. Either, but I've played Skyrim and The Witcher.
You're a gamer to me.
Yeah.
If I met a real gamer, I would be like, and then I don't know.
My boyfriend is a gamer to me. And then like, he's like, no, I'm not a gamer.
Yeah. So anyway, open world thing. Yes, we've created this open world concept. But ultimately, our journey is the journey back to source, Kether, love. So everything that happens along the way is rendering as we go, because there are so many, as we talked about in Kabbalah, there's so many paths that you can take all the time. I mean, you can go, what is it, 32 or something? I don't know. It's a vast amount. I forget the exact number.
Wait, well,
the paths on the tree.
Oh, there are 32 paths, including the 10 Sephiroth, which are paths technically, but there are 22 connecting paths on the tree.
Yeah. I just feel like that furthers my belief in that everything is rendered as we go, because, I mean, there's so many different paths. I don't know if I'm really making too much sense on that, but ultimately, in this simulation, as spiritual beings, the journey and the whole point of this game is getting back
to
love.
That makes perfect sense to me, because that also makes sense in the terms that like everything slows down when you're in a dangerous moment. Like,
right.
It's because you are creating that reality that when things get tense and scary and you think you're about to die, you slow everything down so you can figure shit out. And time actually slows down a little bit for those moments. We can't scientifically prove that, because you can't put a timer in a car when an accident happens. Like, you can't plan for this kind of stuff to happen. You know what I mean? And when you do plan for it to happen, it doesn't work right. This is like quantum physics. It's you, once you start observing something, the outcome changes. So you can't scientifically study this in a way that quote unquote proves it, but that's when the knowledge of Doth comes in. So again, if you have not listened to our Kabbalah episode, just listen to them, because we're going to be referencing it probably every single episode ever.
Yeah.
But on the highest plane of understanding, you have Kether, the source, you have Chakma, the divine masculine, you have Bina, the divine feminine. Chakma represents understanding, wisdom. Bina represents understanding. So that book that's sitting in front of you containing all the knowledge, that is Chakma, that's the wisdom. And then Bina is the understanding of reading it and comprehending it. And then there is the Doth, which is the divine knowledge. So that's when you have two books in front of you that conflict and you point to one and you say, that one's right. I don't know why, but I know it's right. And it's that knowing that is within you. And when you get good at that knowing, you find other people with that knowing and they all point the same direction, because there's only one true divinity.
Right.
But there are so many different ways to get there that we have to all simulate our own realities. And that's why that there is science proving that two people can be standing next to each other and see completely different things happen sometimes. So
crazy.
There's so many different things we could talk about under this umbrella of simulation, the matrix, etc. I didn't really have much else to wrap on the movie. Did you?
I had a couple of things that I think you probably alluded to, but one thing that please correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe this is true. So at I think it's like near the end of the last movie that was released, the agent ends up becoming or being like Neo's shadow self, right?
I think so,
Basically taking over everything with that silver shit that he covers everything with. So that's very representative of what can happen in the Matrix if you don't nurture. And when I say Matrix, I mean our incarnated experience.
Yeah, the reality. Yeah.
So it's very representative of what can happen if you don't balance the wisdom and the understanding, the light and the dark,
it just consumes
you. It completely consumes everything, which is why people can go, we talked about rabbit holes in our conspiracy episodes. And if
the mad scientist archetype. Yes,
you can totally get absorbed in that if you do not balance it with the light or with the wisdom or whichever side you're lacking in. So I just thought that was a really great analogy, because Neo was so absorbed in the air quotes light, I feel like, that he didn't even realize that the agent was his darker self. That's just my take on that. And I think that's pretty much I think that's pretty much it on the Matrix movie.
The only other thing I have for the Matrix movie is just a little like fun fact, and I'm sure there's a million of these that I didn't catch, but this one just jumped out at me. When Neo is on that like train out of the Matrix, that like trippy scene with the white train, and he's waiting for it to come and he doesn't know he got there. It's called Mobile Avenue, and that is in mobile is a anagram for limbo. So that that was interesting. But that was just like a little fun fact that I wrote down. But from there, I wanted to move on to talking about actual simulation theory. It is an actual philosophical theory proposed by a philosopher named Nick Bostrom. I don't know a ton about him. I would love to do another episode one day about Nick Bostrom. Oh, that book that Chas is reading right now is by him.
Yes.
Okay. That makes sense now. Yeah. So he invented simulation theory, and it was based, the whole theory is based on a paper that he wrote. So I'm gonna go over like the basic belief of simulation theory and my beliefs on simulation theory, but then we can talk a little bit, just a little bit, about Bostrom's theory, because I have the three proposals that he has in his theory. And basically his argument is, if you disagree with both of the first two, we're in a simulation, is his proposal. So let me talk about what I believe, because I know more about that, and then we'll talk about that, because you're starting this book, and that's something we'll eventually have more to talk about. Yes. But it's something we have to talk about now as well. But before we get into that, the basics of simulation theory is that we are living in a simulation, and we wouldn't be able to tell if we were not living in a simulation. Because if it were good enough of a simulation, it would be unidentifiable from reality, and we would just exist in it. Virtual reality is getting better and better every day. And when you put on those goggles, eventually your body adjusts to that reality. And if it looks like you're about to step off a cliff, it feels like you're about to step off a cliff. And it literally feels like that. So if we were in a good enough simulation, we shouldn't be able to tell, is kind of the basics behind it. We could get into like a Black Mirror and all of those episodes, because there's a couple episodes that talk about different variations of a simulation theory and why a simulation would exist and how we would use them. I believe one of them was like dating, and it put a couple through like dozens of hypothetical scenarios to see if they could survive as a couple. And in the show, it was highly traumatic because they were real consciousnesses that were going through a simulation, and they couldn't tell it wasn't a simulation. And then it would like restart, and they would have this weird deja vu, but they couldn't tell. And then there was one where they were put in a artificial simulation to interrogate somebody, and like they didn't know how they got there, and they were like working somewhere, and they were just kind of, it was like two guys on a rig out in the middle of nowhere and just talking about life, and he was trying to get him to confess to some crime, and then once he confessed, they were like, all right, let us out. And it had only been like a couple hours. But
what the hell?
Yeah, there's like a lot of crazy simulation variations on Black Mirror that are so good. Oh my gosh, I want to rewatch it now.
Isn't it so weird? I think we've had conversations about this before, but like we've talked about how we would use pop culture to remind ourselves of certain things.
Yeah.
And it just, ever since then, I've noticed it more and more and more. Like we've got the Matrix movie, all the shit in Black Mirror.
Oh,
we truly do use... And maybe that's why I'm going to use that as my excuse as to why I
watch them, but
love it so much.
You don't, but I love it so much because even if they are making these
right.
to discredit these theories, there is the perspective that Hollywood is making all this stuff just so you can say, oh, you saw that in a movie that's
right.
not real. But I still like it because I'm awake. And when you watch it from an awake perspective, it's like, oh, cool. I like how you use that concept in your
yeah.
movie. And if everybody were awake, this would be great. But then at the beginning of movies, they would talk about like all the occult subjects that you're about to learn about. And then like there'd be discussions about that. But we don't live in an awake society. We live in a suppressed society because the social engineers don't want us to know these divine concepts. And we've never lived in a society that was capable of the whole population understanding these concepts. Like if you think about it, we've never lived in such an intelligent society. It as much as I don't love giant factory farms and agriculture how it is right now, and I believe it could be better, we still have a population of people that are more intellectually inclined than they are laborious work inclined, and that makes them more apt to be able to understand these complicated occult subjects. Whereas back in the day when the only people to know these occult subjects were secret societies and royalty, the average person was like a farmer or a peasant,
right.
and they weren't thinking about, they couldn't. And maybe they understood them, these concepts on a spiritual level, but they did not understand them in a way where they could tell somebody else about them.
Right.
So the fact that we live in a society that could even possibly have an inkling at understanding all this is really cool and exciting, but we're still woke and not awake. We're still being controlled by the social engineers instead of
yep.
seeing what they're doing. So that's why I don't feel bad about liking this stuff, because I can see it and I just think it's clever how they're putting it in there. Sometimes it gets bad, like when it's real hard virtue signal, like just trying so hard to be inclusive.
Propaganda.
And, yeah, just where it's just like super.
Well, there's propaganda, and then I think there's like
unnecessary including things that
yeah.
don't have anything to do with the plot, which is literally breaking a rule of storytelling. Don't bring it up if it doesn't have anything to do with the plot. And they will just randomly bring up like the most stupid concepts in the middle of, and that's what I hate. But
I
when it's Black Mirror type shit, when they're like, yeah, we're going to do this to you, I'm like, cool. I see it coming, you know? that's fine. but yeah, for as far as simulation theory goes, we'll get into Nick Bostrom in a minute. But I personally believe we live in an organic simulation. So I kind of coined this term. I'm sure somebody else has said it before me, but I just made it up. But I like it because it kind of incorporates the idea of the mental universe and the idea of the simulation theory into one phrase. So I think it's more of an organic simulation where it is a simulation of the mind of God. And we are all within the mind of God. So we are of God. We are all God. But we are all just part of the all. The whole is greater than its parts.
Right.
I love that phrase. And Know Thyself, a podcast that Chas and I absolutely love, recently said in one of their podcasts, like you can cut up a dog and like cut it into pieces and then reconstruct it and sew it back together, but you're never going to make it come back to life and be your best friend again. It's going to be a dead dog.
Oh,
and
shit.
Yeah, I know it's pretty dark, but it's also really powerful because
yeah.
you literally cannot cut it up into pieces and then put it back together whole. The whole is greater than its parts, and
right.
you cannot part it apart. Oh God, we can get into like organ trafficking there too.
Oh, shit.
Sorry, I went dark there. But seriously, like these social engineers don't give a shit about your whole
no.
being greater than your parts. They would rather just part you out. And there's a lot of darkness behind the social engineers and the motives that their occult knowledge relies on. And that's why I feel confident understanding this occult knowledge and using occult knowledge, and I'm not worried about like falling to the evils of whatever, or I'm not one of those people's like, yeah, I don't touch witchcraft because I'm not dark like that. I don't want to get controlled or anything, because you only fall to the darkness if you allow yourself to.
Right.
So anyway, that was a tangent. So we live in an organic simulation, and that is backed up by many different sources, in my opinion. Another source that kind of backs me up on this conceptualization that I'm going for here is a CIA document that is titled The Gateway Experience. Now, I've talked about the CIA document before, but this is where it really fits into the conversation, because the Gateway Experience is a experience that you can still pay to be taught today.
Crazy.
It's at, I believe, the Monroe Institute, and you can look it up right now. It's like $3,000 or something like that. You can do it all online. But the basic premise behind this experience is that using knowledge of your brain waves and certain frequencies that certain sounds make, they can play certain sounds and walk you into certain brain wave states. So they can get you from beta to theta to delta or whatever that is. They can get you to the highest one, which I do believe is theta. And that can eventually help you astral project.
Yeah.
And read the document for all the technicalities behind that. But that's just the basic premise behind it. They'll play certain noises and then your brainwave adjusts to those noises. And then eventually you can train your brain to sync up with the waves of the earth, and which allows you to raise up higher than the dimensions of the earth, and so on and so forth. This document explains all of this, and it also explains that this is possible because we exist in a holographic universe. This is nothing that you did not learn in science class. We exist in a universe made up of atoms,
right?
And those atoms are just tiny vibrating molecules of mostly empty space. That's a fucking hologram. Like, that is literally a hologram as far as I'm concerned. And this document is basing its understanding off of that. And that's a simulation. So we've come full circle. It's not a computer simulation.
No.
But it's still a simulation as far as the analogy is concerned. So it's an organic simulation. Another really interesting point that I think, I don't know if Nick Bostrom uses this argument at all or if I've just heard somebody say it, but there's an argument that just the simple idea that numbers were pretty much discovered and not invented kind of proves that we're in a simulation, because computer programs are run by numbers, and how did they already exist? But again, I think that's just, numbers are a non-verbal language that are universal across languages.
Yeah.
Therefore, it is the language of the divine. And we could get into gematria, which is, we didn't even touch on that in the Kabbalah episodes, but it's a huge part of Kabbalah.
Right.
And there's so much divinity in numbers. So I don't think that's a valid argument, because that, again, just fits in the organic simulation. It's organically simulated. So there has to be programs and processes to simulate everything, whether that is fairies and elemental spirits or it's artificial intelligence and computer programs. I think it's the same shit. It's the same way of explaining it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then one other aspect of simulation theory in the Matrix that I wanted to talk about is the video game aspect of things. So Chas is not a gamer at all, as we've already established. And I'm not much of a gamer at all. And I'm not good at games. Don't talk to me about games. I won't know what you're talking about. I have played Skyrim. I have played The Witcher 3. And I have played Grand Theft Auto all the way through. And I love open world games because I'm not good at games. So I like to just wander around and look at shit and be really high why I do it. And I love them from that. And I just want to get the groundwork clear that we're never going to have like video game content or anything like that.
No.
Not in that realm. Unfortunately, it is very cool. But it is a very valuable, especially open world games. It's a valuable analogy, again, for our actual reality. I don't think we're in a simulation or a video game or anything like that. But I do think that we operate as if we were in one. So when you start Skyrim, for example, you choose your race of character, you choose your abilities, you choose your visual appearance, you choose all these different aspects of your character before you start the game. And then you start the game with that classic intro that you're waking up on the wagon and you continue into your adventure and all that fun stuff. But what I personally believe, and we'll have to have an entire different episode about reincarnation and incarnation, yeah. And that will have to be a pretty research heavy one because I don't have a heavy opinion on incarnation. But one thing I do believe is that we existed before this incarnation. I am pretty fucking certain of that.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty fucking certain that I existed as a individualized piece of source before this. This is not my first incarnation.
No.
And that is something I believe firmly. So with those two knowledge pieces of knowledge that I have, I have to base my beliefs around that. So with that information, I believe that we come into this incarnation for a reason. And how that reason is chosen, I don't really know. Whether we came from a previous human life or a previous animal life, or we came straight from the soup, or we had to live non-physical incarnations. I don't know all those details, but I do believe we chose to came here and we had a reason to come here. Mm-hmm. So when we are born and when we incarnate into this realm, part of the quote unquote rules of this game are that you don't remember any of these rules. You are incarnated completely fresh with a fresh character in a fresh race with fresh abilities and fresh pros, cons, all that jazz, just like when you start Skyrim. And I love that analogy because you know there's people who are just naturally good at certain things.
Yeah.
There are people who were born into this realm and they just like put all of their points into musical ability and they're like suck at everything else, but they're really good at music or whatever. You know what I mean? And then there's people who are really balanced. Those are the people who, when you choose your character, you line up all your points as even as possible because you can't decide which one. If you would rather be good at strength or you'd rather be good at speed, you can't decide. So you just make them all even. There's so many different ways of applying that video game aspect to reality. And so your whole point of living is to figure out what the point of living was. So why did you incarnate? What are your skills? What did you choose your character as? So imagine you play Skyrim and you choose your character, but you're blackout drunk. And then you have to finish the game. But when you wake up, you have no memory of how Skyrim works. And you don't even know how your Xbox works. You just don't know how to do any of it. That's like kind of what life is. But you're a baby. And you have to grow. You have to grow.
Drunk baby.
Yeah, and then you woke up. This is the best analogy we've ever had.
Oh my God.
Yeah, by the way. But anyway, so that's part of the game, though. You wake up with amnesia. You're born with amnesia, and you have to figure it out as you go. As you get older and as you grow up and as your physical body becomes more capable of handling more energy and more information and more spirituality and more light, you wake up more and more to your spiritual purpose. And I mean, we could even get into a discussion on astrology, yeah, and the return of your Saturn returns and all the different choices you have to make in your life and the destiny that you have been given and how that's not really your destiny and you can overcome that, but you just have to know it's there and all these different conversations we could have with this. But sticking to video games and how that relates to simulation theory, it's all just a adventure. It doesn't really matter what we're doing here. The whole point is that we are source experiencing itself. Yep. So when we were without a body and we chose to incarnate, whether we were part of source and we chose to separate, and this is somehow our first incarnation, and Chas and I just got a scoop full of soup that had been used quite a bit and it's not new soup.
Right.
Or whether Chas and I...
A lot of them old beans.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Or whether Chas and I are a piece, a spoonful of that soup that has separated from the soup and has just been in the spoon for a very long time.
Yep.
And gone through different physical incarnations with the exact same spoonful of soup. Whatever option, I don't know. And I don't really care. It doesn't really matter to me because I know that one of those are happening, and either way, I chose to come here. I chose to come here with certain abilities, and I have 5 fucking Virgo placements. I think I'm supposed to talk about little details and stupid shit like that. So here I am. And that's part of my game, and part of Chas's game is this too, but it's also just a part of her game. So this is a self-help analogy as well. If you game Defy your life, you're gonna get far places. My boyfriend says all the time he learned more from World of Warcraft than he did from high school. He literally learned how to trade stocks, how to run a business, how to manage supplies and manage like your expenses, and he learned all this from playing video games, and he hated school. So if you apply these principles to your real life, it can be very useful. It becomes a problem when you're stuck in the Matrix and you're stuck in the video games. And this is a really good time to talk about NPCs. So when you're playing video games and you are playing MMO, massive multiplayer online games, and you have a lot of real people playing the game, there are also fake people playing the game. Yep. And those fake people are just usually computers in the video games or programs that are running these artificial intelligences that you can interact with and that might seem pretty real. And they fight pretty real and they're hard. Those bosses, those are all NPCs. They're scary and you need them sometimes, but they're still non-player character. So that's what that stands for. And we unfortunately believe that a lot of humans on this planet may be NPCs themselves. And does that mean they do not contain source? Of course not. They're still part of source, but they haven't turned on their light. They haven't turned on any of the programming they have.
Yeah, I think one way to distinguish an NPC is someone who won't or can't awaken, someone who won't or can't turn on that light. Because if you also, if you believe in simulation theory, NPCs are a part of that. You can't not, I feel like, believe in NPCs if you believe in that, because if this is a simulation, then inevitably there are only a handful of us that actually are incarnated into this simulation. And how do you explain the other people, NPCs? So I just feel like they very much so go hand in
hand.
Ooh,
and that talk, you could talk about the Georgia Guidestones.
Oh my God.
Like, maybe that wasn't actually like a genocide situation that it's talking about in the Georgia Guidestones. Maybe they're just talking about that is the souls that have carnated. I don't remember the exact number. Sorry, that was just, neither of us are prepared for this conversation at all.
But these are the best conversations because they get started from the shit that we have prepared. So going off of the idea just for a second that there are only a handful of us in the simulation, how many Like, is it 500,000? Isn't that what the Georgia guy?
I don't know if it's like 144,000 or 144 million, but like, or 10 million.
What do you think?
Like,
how many do you think? Like, if we're just talking about like one simulation, this one that we're in.
I mean, I would say, I think it's hard to say a number. I would say probably more of a percentage because. Yeah,
which is a number.
Because I would think that for each soul, there's a few NPCs that are generating. Right, right. So I'd say maybe like 15-25% are real incarnated people. Maybe 33%, you know, a good third chunk, that divine 3-3.
Damn.
You know, what?
No.
You're just wondering?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of the questions you had?
Yeah.
That, I think that would be a solid amount, because if you think about it, these occult podcasts, although they're becoming more popular and more people are waking up, we still live in a society that is very empty and very shell-like in its operating. So it would make sense that the social engineers are profiting off of the knowledge that there are a lot of NPCs who are going to be fine just operating in their everyday life. I work in retail and there's a lot of people there who've worked there for a very long time. And I hope no one who like knows me listens to this podcast and they're like, you call me an empty shell, bitch. I mean, that's kind of what I'm doing, but also not really. If you're listening to this, you're probably not an NPC. But anyway, no, neither here nor there.
Yeah. Another thought that I had about NPCs and like how to distinguish them is, and this is just my personal opinion, this isn't something I read anywhere, but what if, you know how you have those moments with people where you just, like with us, like we just, when we became friends, we just like knew. Like, yeah, there's some things, there's connections with people that you can't necessarily explain. You just know. Like, it's that intuitive knowing and understanding and wisdom all at once. What if, like, when that happens, you're meeting a fellow incarnate and, like,
yeah,
that's
no, for sure.
That's definitely not an NPC. Yeah. You know what I mean? I don't know. This is just stuff that I've thought about a lot in regards to simulation theory and NPC and spirituality, because I do feel like it impacts.
I think it's just hard to tell, though, because sometimes I feel like I have had that spark with people and then it fades. And I think it's possible that those people are just not awake yet. I think it's possible that.
Yeah, definitely.
I think it's really very hard to tell. And I bet there, I honestly truly think that everybody has the capability of waking up, but the NPCs of the world and how we're talking about them may have to somehow find the ability to take in more light, which would require them to take on like literally more soul, more energy, more spirit, which sounds like abduction channeling situation, honestly, now that I'm saying it out loud. But I think that's possible, because I think that all the bodies here are souls that incarnated. You know what I mean? Like, I if you're born, like, unless there's literally aliens just like appearing, from my understanding of reality, I think it would be hard for like NPCs to literally just be born empty shells. I think there's some.
No, I feel like NPCs are part of the simulation, so they would be rendered as we go.
Right. So, oh, okay. So they're like literally fake people. Okay. See,
and that's how I feel. That's what I was saying when. That's how you distinguish with that personal connection, with that divine connection that you feel with someone. Yeah. When you know that, you know you're not interacting with an NPC. So, and that's just like a theory, a thought.
That would be fucking nuts.
That's
though.
That's why I get so fucked up over this, because that's how I think about it.
Like, everyone we work with, except for like two people, are actually real people. And when they go home, they just disappear.
I mean,
like,
when they leave
our sight line, they just disappear.
That's why I asked the question, like, how many incarnates do you maybe think? Because that would.
But see, that's what when I say incarnate, I think inherently I'm understanding it as someone who has so much fucking light that they're not gonna not wake up. they're waking up. There's no way they're not waking up. We're star seeds. We're the
right,
seeds.
Then they're
the
not
stars.
An NPC.
Right. And they're not an NPC. But from my understanding of NPCs is they're still real people with real lives and in real houses and with like they go home and you could like follow them to their home. And I guess if you were doing that, they would still be rendered.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
No, I know. It's hard to say, but like
it's just mind boggling.
But from a Great Awakening perspective and the 2012 and the Mayan calendar perspective, like I don't think ancient societies had NPCs, so the whole like percentage thing kind of falls apart, because I think a whole society can be awake, and I think that the NPCs could take on more light and become true awakened individuals, but the likelihood of that happening is very unlikely unless something catastrophic and crazy fucking happens that allows all these people to actually go through the opening, breaking down, and raising up of vibrations, like the going up the path of the arrow in this incarnation, you know, not right. like dying and assimilating, but shooting your consciousness up the micro path of the arrow to take on a shit ton of source energy all of a sudden. I think that Great Awakening, I don't know how that would look like, but I do think that's possible, you know, from my current understanding. I honestly had never even considered literal NPCs that are just
I took it very literally.
Yeah.
But
that kind of gets into like computers again, though. So that's like if it's an organic simulation, is the source really just like rendering reality for us?
So we create our own reality. So yeah.
But the reality that we're in is still the base reality of source, right? We get back into that matrix and like the whole architect and the oracle. Yeah. There's still the base reality. There's still like a reality that we aren't in control of, and they're run by the divine programs, whether they're computer programs or not. I don't think they are. I think they're more spirits and abstract energies like these elemental spirits. I think that reality is influenced by us.
Yeah.
But that's why we can't just turn water into wine and shit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's why there are physics. That's why we can throw a ball up and measure where it's going to land by the trajectory and the speed and stuff like that. That's why there's numbers and stuff like that. So from that understanding, because you can't deny the base reality, we interact with the base reality. That's why, again, the simulation theory is really useful, because a simulation requires input and output. We put input into the baseline's reality. So by that understanding, there are people included in the baseline reality, which I have never even considered before, and I definitely think is a possibility now that I'm thinking about it. But that is just a very distinct difference. From my understanding up until right now in this conversation, I have always considered the base reality minus the people, always. Like all the people are inhabiting the base reality. And whether they are completely shutting off their light and they're not waking up ever in this incarnation, and that's an NPC, someone who never, ever, ever wakes up and they have no real chance of waking up.
Yeah.
That's what I always thought an NPC was, but I never included them in the base reality, meaning they are a complete just simulation of these forces.
Yeah.
And I definitely think that's possible too, now that I'm thinking about it again. But
it's definitely a different perspective.
I also think it's like a lot of semantics, you know? Is it the divine energy creating a like magic fake person for you to interact with? Or is it a divine source energy creating a person that's never gonna wake up and they're literally just asleep the whole time, and source knows they're not gonna wake up and they're just like existing on base operations? Like it's kind of the same thing.
It is the same thing. It's just from a different, I think
it's semantics. It's just a different way of explaining it. Andrew and I have been talking a lot since we recorded our podcast with him, which this will come out after. So hope you listened to the We Is Me episode with Andrew Cipriano. But every time we talk, he's like, we sound like we're arguing, but we're never arguing. No. We're just going back and forth saying the exact same thing in different ways over and over again. And that's why I can only have friends that understand that. Because my boyfriend said the other day, he's like, you know, you always sound like you're arguing. And I was like, no, but now I am. Now I'm arguing. But also, there's always perspective to add to the situation. And that's why I just said, fuck it, I'm making a podcast. Someone will listen to me. Because I think there's value in a perspective of ours, but I think of lots of people's. And I want to hear others' perspectives and share those others' perspectives on a platform such as Awake Not Woke, which is our whole premise. That was another tangent. Anyway, NPCs are a crazy, crazy conversation. So to wrap things up a little bit on my notes, at least, I wanted to talk about Nick Bostrom, which apparently Chas has a book on that I didn't even know going into this. I learned about this through a YouTube video that just briefly talked about simulation theory. I didn't even finish it. So this is something that will be continued in future episodes. But the basic, the paper that sparked all of the simulation theory talk is a paper by Bostrom, and he has a few propositions in this paper that basically, in his perspective, prove that we are in a simulation. So the first proposition is all technological civilizations go extinct before reaching technological maturity. So I think that's a pretty apt thing to say.
Can you say it again?
Yes. All technological civilizations go extinct before reaching technological maturity.
Okay.
So by that logic, that would be saying basically we blow ourselves up before we could make a simulation that would be powerful enough to sustain this type of reality. So if you disagree with that, it goes to his next proposition. Because if you disagree with that, then we're not in a simulation. But if you don't, the next proposition is technological civilizations do develop, but they don't create simulations because they can't, or because it's dangerous, which is apparently what Chas's book is about, and it's written by the same person, so that would make sense. Again, we haven't done a ton of research on this. This is a future episode in the making, but it's basically saying if you think that there are technological civilizations out there that have not gone extinct before they had the technology to do it, then they just didn't make it for whatever reason. So if you disagree with that, he pretty much says we're probably in a simulation.
Jesus.
Yeah. And I don't know if I necessarily agree with that because, again, everything we just talked about, but who knows? I'm not super educated in this guy's theory, but basically what he's saying is, if we were in a simulation, we would be in what's called an ancestor simulation, which I think is what we were talking about off mic for a second, which is the whole AI would create something more intelligent right. than itself, and it would be like an ancestor of that original technology. This is very complex, interesting tech stuff. But at the end of the day, as a spiritual person, I do not think we're in a computer simulation.
No.
I think that it's possible and that it's very valuable, and there's a whole conversation that could be had behind that, whether you think it's good or bad. That's not the point. There is a conversation to be had there, but that's not this one. But this, again, just to wrap up on my notes, this all gets into the if a tree falls in a forest and there's no one around to hear it, doesn't make a noise. This gets into quantum physics. This gets into the Mandela effect, because if the simulation is rendering as we go and we're all rendering a slightly different version of the Matrix, then of course we're going to all render certain things a certain way. And then when we go back to look at it, there's some inconsistencies. So the Mandela effect is the effect where there's a lot of things in the past that we all collectively like are more likely to remember incorrectly. So my favorite one is Snow White, the famous line of, "Mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all?" That's not what she says. That's never said. It's Magic Mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all.
What?
Yeah. Go watch the movie. I have literally rented the movie just to see if that's true. And it's true. It does not say Mirror Mirror on the wall. It says Magic Mirror on the wall.
I'm not okay with that.
Yeah. And then like the Bernstein Bears is actually like the Berenstein Bears. Like it's
no.
It's very, and there's so many different things like that. And that I think just again is because it's still a simulated reality that we are interacting with. So I think it's very possible that we are all interacting with it into a way that things might slightly change from one perspective to another. And when we get to a future point in time, the past might just get changed slightly because collectively we're all putting attention on something, or things just don't get translated the same because it's all just simulated as we go. The past doesn't exist anymore. You know what I mean? So it can still change. It can literally, we can look into the past. And I think this is a tangent, but it's relevant. Andrew and I were talking about like a psychological technique where you have a traumatic memory and you think about the memory and then you think about an outcome of the memory that would have satisfied you and that would not have traumatized you. And then you just kind of think of that every time you think of the traumatic memory, and it rewires your brain to not be as affected by the traumatic memory. And he's telling me this and I'm like, that's you're changing the past. That's witchcraft. That's just shadow work, dude. Like that's all it's the same. Again, we just have the same conversations where we're going back and forth saying the same thing, but that's literally what you're doing, is you're going back to that memory that moment doesn't exist anymore. And then you're changing the moment. And now the moment is different to you. That moment happens that way to you.
Yeah.
And to the other person, they will still remember it differently. But as long as you say, no, I walked out of that situation and I'm stronger now. And that's whatever, that's your reality, that's your reality now. So that's how the Mandela effect fits into this, because we are input output in this whole simulation as well. So although there is a base reality, it's not always as solid as we think it's going to be.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's all the notes I have. Chas, I know you had some things we talked about you wrapping up on, kind of leading this into a more spiritual perspective. I've been like huge talking about all the technicalities and specifics that are always rolling around in my brain.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have too many notes on Truman Show, but I do want to talk about that.
Oh yeah.
Because that's a very,
I love that movie.
It's a great representation of this whole idea that.
I love Jim Carrey's serious movies better than any other movies he's ever done.
What's the one? I Love Eternal You, Philip.
What?
I Love You, Philip Morris. Isn't that what it's called?
I have not seen that one.
Oh my God, it's so good.
I love Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
That one's great too, I'm pretty sure it's called I Love You, Philip Morris, and it's very good.
I'll watch it.
Anyway. Yeah, okay. Anyway, for Truman Show, I went down a YouTube rabbit hole one night, and I watched this one guy's YouTube channel. I hope I say his name right. Devin Elon Madge. In preparation for the simulation episode, I think I was looking for information on NPC, ended up finding him. Anyway, he really talks about incredible references to the Matrix and uses the Truman Show as a example of that. So just a few things that I noted down that are mostly were just kind of like, what the fuck thoughts for me. First of all, Truman equals true man.
Yeah.
And then the creator or producer of the Truman Show in the movie, his name is Christoph, which backwards of Christ.
Of Christ.
So
fuck.
There's that.
That's crazy. When the thing falls from the sky, is that what you're about to say?
No, but I was thinking that for a second, but that wasn't what I was about to say. So that's weird. When Truman exits the Matrix, he makes a cross, like he does like a bow, but he like stretches his arms out, makes a cross and bows, which is significant of the crucifixion. Yet again, it always comes
up. Rebirth.
Yeah. And he's dying to the flesh,
be rebirthed,
to the Truman.
And he's like, essentially taking the red pill there, too, because he's leaving his simulated reality.
And it's actually kind of crazy how much biblical symbolism there is intertwined with that. And I'm just constantly mind blown about how the Bible is represented in so many areas of occultism and conspiracy and just so many crazy connections. That's kind of it about the Truman Show. I will say his name again, Devin Elon Madge, because that guy had me fucked up over some shit. So it was a pretty good.
Yeah, the thing
hole to
I just
down.
Briefly talked about. He you sent me a video of his, and I watched some of it where there's a part of the movie too where a light falls from the sky, and that's when
Sirius.
Truman. Yes, it's got some code on it. There's a lot of symbolism in that movie.
So much. Like, you could
I got to watch it again.
And he breaks it down.
Movie night soon?
Yeah. But he breaks it down in an episode. And it's very, very fun to watch. So look it up if you're interested.
Did you have any, like, spiritual tie-ins for this ending on a light note?
Yeah. So I think going off of the idea that we chose to incarnate into this simulation, that's kind of my chain of thought.
We
are of God, of Christ, and we chose to incarnate into this simulation. So whether there are a handful of us here or a lot, like you were saying, is not really the point. The point is we chose to incarnate into this experience, and the whole point is to know ourselves and to know God. And by knowing ourselves, we ultimately do know God. And the ultimate journey is just going back to love and back to that heart space, which is where we originated. So I love how the simulation theory in the Matrix plays into this and why it is a great representation of what we came here to do, which is to basically go back and remember who we are. So yeah.
It's very meta, and I love it, but it's all, you'll find yourself repeating yourself a lot with this spiritual and occult practices and understandings and readings, because we're all one. We're all one thing. There's only one thing. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Be nice to each other.
Be nice to each other, because it's a fucking simulation. So it doesn't matter anyway.
And we could get into a conversation on karma too. That output and input into the world. Again, if you want to output some shit, you're going to get some shit back. One time, can I tell a quick story real quick? Why I just have it in my brain.
Yeah, but one note on karma. I was listening to that East Forest album that I sent you the other day. And there was this song called Karma. I think it was called Karma something. But one mantra that they kept repeating is the mind is karma. Which is in it, when I heard it and I like let myself sit with that statement for a minute. Holy shit.
No, in my story. So around the holidays last year, with COVID and everything going on, I at my work, we have plexiglass up everywhere, and I'm very clumsy. So I broke some of the plexiglass and it was very sharp. And I was working with my coworker and he was like, we should like put some tape on that. That's really sharp. Someone's going to get hurt. And I jokingly said, I want someone to get hurt. And I was just being an asshole. And then I cut my arm so bad. And I was like, God damn it. So you're right. Yeah. The mind is karma, because I jokingly put that asshole. I'm always an asshole at work because I worked in retail. So we're allowed to be assholes because we hate our lives so much there. But it was a joke. Like, I genuinely didn't mean it as a joke, but the universe was like, oh, you want someone? Okay, here. Is that funny? I think it wasn't. Okay. I put tape on it right after that. So yeah, that's a good ending story to watch what you say. The simulation is always going to take that input and give you the right amount of output. So,
yep. Then you create your own reality. So if you don't watch what you say, you're not going to know where the fuck you are.
I love it. Well, that's it, I think, right?
Cool.
Yay. Next episode will be on witchcraft, and we look forward to making that.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Oh, yay. See you then.
See ya.